Good day and welcome to the Assure Holdings quarterly earnings call. Today's conference is being recorded, and at this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Preston Parsons. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the inaugural quarterly financial results conference call for Assure Holdings. My name is Preston Parsons, and I'm the founder and executive chairman of Assure Holdings. I'm joined by Matthew Willer, president of Assure Holdings. The agenda for the call today will be to discuss the financial results for the second quarter and 6 months ended June 30th. Also, since this is our inaugural call, we'd like to talk about how we got here, discuss historical financials, and we'd also like to give some color on business operations and initiatives the company is currently undertaking. At the end of the call, we will take some questions as time permits. Overall, we had a very good quarter, especially taking into consideration Q2 is, in general, historically a slower part of the year for surgical cases performed. Also of note, management was deeply entrenched in the going public process during much of Q2, thus taking away from our ability to focus on business expansion. Even with that said, we were able to onboard new surgeons in Q2, and we participated in more surgeries than we did in Q1. With the process of going public now behind us, we are solely focused on business expansion, which we will get into later in the call. We also recently announced our approval and subsequent trading on the OTCQB exchange under the symbol ARHH. With Assure being a U.S.-based company, we felt it was vital at this stage in the company to have a listing on the OTCQB, so as the U.S. investment community could have an easier path to investing in the company. For the next part of the call, I'd like to pass it over to Matthew Willer to discuss our financial results for the quarter and 6 months ended June 30th. Go ahead, Matt.
Thank you, Preston. For those of you that haven't seen the press release, we did just announce the 3 and 6 months ended June 30th, 2017. I'll go through the quarterly and six-month results and point out some highlights that I think are material to the quarter. Total revenue for the quarter in U.S. dollars was $4,026,440. For us, it was a milestone exceeding the $4 million threshold for the first time. Cost of revenue, $628,759, leaving a gross margin of just under $3.4 million. Going down to the operating expense category, general administrative was $1.178 million, depreciation of $57,000, sales and marketing of $128,000. Notably, in our operating expenses, there is an increase in the G&A. Most of this disparity between Q1 and Q2 is attributed to a lot of the transactional costs and associated expenses that went along with the RTO process. This generated operational earnings of just over $2 million. The contribution from the equity method investments was $550,000, leaving us with a quarterly income before taxes of $2.578 million. Our provision for income taxes of $411,000 being deducted from that left us with a quarterly net income of $2.167 million for Q2. On a six-month basis, we're very pleased that our overall revenue was just shy of $8 million, $7.94 million to be exact, gross margin of $6,778,000, total operating expenses of just over $2 million, and earnings of $4.75 million. The contribution from the equity method investments for those same 6 months was $1.456 million, income before taxes $6,190,000, and a net income for the 6 months ended June 30 of $5,380,000. As we mentioned when reviewing the second quarter numbers and also in conjunction with the comments made by Preston Parsons, The transaction was actually closed in May of 2017, which was in the middle of our second quarter. In addition to the bandwidth that it consumed for management, just from a process standpoint, it also generated non-recurring expenses in legal, accounting, and exchange fees. We've spoken about this in our management discussion and analysis, which is posted on www.cedar.com alongside our quarterly and six-month financial statements. With roughly $1 million of expenses attributed to the transaction and on a non-recurring basis, we're very pleased that our net income would have been north of $3 million absent those expenses. I'm going to turn it back over to Preston Parsons, who I think is going to give a little bit more color on some of our expansion initiatives.
Thank you, Matt. At this time, I'd like to talk about some of the expansion initiatives currently underway at Assure. First, focusing just on Colorado. We are currently onboarding new spine surgeons that will have some contribution to the current quarter and certainly to Q4. Also, we anticipate expanding into other surgical verticals during the balance of this year, specifically cardiovascular surgery. This is very exciting for us, as we will be able to greatly expand our addressable market just here in Colorado. And just as a note, we've only participated in spine surgeries to date, so this will be a whole another vertical for us. Now to talk about expansion initiatives in other states. In March, we hired George Sims as the Director of Business Development. George brings a wealth of experience in the medical device and service industries. He also has deep, long-standing relationships with an array of surgeons across the country. George is based in Texas, and thus we anticipate Texas being the first state we expand to outside of Colorado. Just to give everyone a little insight on the process of how that works when we expand to these other states. Once we establish a surgeon or a group of surgeons that are interested in the services of Assure, we do a deep dive into the due diligence process of the legal landscape of that particular state. We have our legal counsel do the initial diligence. Then we contract with the local counsel or a local counsel in that particular state. This combination ultimately delivers a legal opinion as to the structure we will then move forward with. From there, we search the area and the country for the very best technologists available. Once we identify and hire a technologist, we can then contract with the appropriate hospital or surgery center to provide our services. It's a very robust process that usually takes 3 to 4 months. We definitely don't cut any corners. We believe, though, this process helps set us apart from other companies in the industry. Matt, could you please provide us an update on some of the operational initiatives currently underway?
Sure, absolutely. So in light of Assure's rapid growth, we obviously recognize the necessity to bolster our infrastructure. To date, we've used a host of outside providers in accounting, legal, HR, et cetera. The company is currently engaging executive search firms to bring on a full-time Denver-based CFO to assist us in our continued expansion and our strategic business initiatives. The company will be moving into a new office that it can accommodate these additional hires on September 1st of this year. In addition to a full-time CFO that will reside in-house, we're also in the process of interviewing a director of HR and a controller who the CFO will have influence over hiring. Additionally, we're reviewing all of the legal landscapes in terms of the expansion process, as Preston had mentioned, but from an operational standpoint, understanding the economics of those different landscapes as we, you know, conduct our first procedures and develop business in each of these target states. realistically, we are square in the middle of kind of the front end of our busiest season. The numbers that we reported for both the 3 and the 6 months ended June 30 encompassed a period that historically is the slower time of the year. So absent the growth initiatives, we anticipate the seasonality of Q3 and certainly into Q4 to accelerate the contributions that we have from our existing relationships. When we add to that some of the onboarding initiatives both in Colorado and the target states, we do anticipate Q3 and Q4 to be our strongest quarters of the year. One thing we wanted to bring to light, since we didn't have a conference call in the first quarter, is making a comparison from Q1 to Q2 and understanding a couple of the components that contributed to that comparison. In Q1, the numbers in terms of the top-line revenue were largely similar, albeit a bit less, than Q2. However, Q1 had a material contribution to the upside of both revenue and ultimately net income from what management terms as true-ups. Our audit firm, EKS&H, worked with us as a private company for the better part of 6 months, developing a comprehensive strategic revenue recognition policy that is very conservative, so much so that obviously they signed an unqualified opinion on our annual audit. However, as a result of that conservative approach, the company has experienced a material amount of overcollections vis-a-vis what has been booked. And in Q1, that contribution encompassed a lot of 2016 in addition to the collections in the 90 days ended March 31st, whereas in Q2, the true-ups were confined to the 90-day period from April 1st to June 30. So from a fundamental operational standpoint, Q2 was, in fact, a better quarter. We onboarded additional doctors. We performed additional cases. And vis-a-vis Q1 versus Q2, operationally, it was frankly busier. That'll just continue as we segue into the tail part of Q3 and ultimately into the busiest time, which in fact is Q4. I know that there are a number of people on the call that may have some questions. We did block off a limited amount of time to field a few calls, and then management will make themselves available throughout the balance of this week to have any one-on-one conversations with parties that would like to ask specific questions and perhaps go into more detail than we can on the call. So at this time, I'd like to open the call to any questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing *1 on your telephone keypad. If you're on a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, *1 for questions. We'll pause for just a moment to assemble the queue. Again, that is *1 for questions.
We're ready when you are.
Thank you. We'll take our first question from Martin Gagel. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. I'm in a noisy environment here, so I hope you can hear me all right. Can you talk about, do you have any sort of non-revenue metrics? You talked about doctors that you've onboarded or procedures. Is there any other sort of measurement or sort of metric that we can sort of track your progress or your evolution?
Sure. Hi, Martin. This is Matt. Historically, as a young company, of which some of you guys have been a party to, our development from a handful of doctors to kind of where we are today, doctors has been kind of the metric that everyone has asked about and has come to expect, even if it's in an informal summary of kind of how the company is progressing. Just using that metric because that's just the benchmark that people have been accustomed to, even though it's not going to be likely the ongoing metric that we use from a reporting basis. We're currently working with 19 surgeons. To give you an idea from a comparative standpoint, that's up from 10 at the end of 2016. And, of course, those were onboarded at various times throughout the year. Now, as we go forward here, especially as we spread our wings and we're branching into other states and other surgical verticals, right now we're working with our board of directors, and we'll certainly be working with our new CFO once he's onboarded, to come up with a metric that we feel gives the street transparency into what the operations look like on some sort of unit economic basis. To talk about numbers of doctors as we continue to grow and branch into other states and verticals, I think we've outgrown the metric, even though that's the one that most people are currently familiar with, so that's why I even bring it up today. But different doctors have absolutely different individual profiles, from guys that are very busy to guys that eat equally as much or not busy. The types of cases they perform can be radically different, and therefore the value of that relationship can be radically different. For instance, a doctor that might do several hundred procedures a year that are not terribly invasive and only take a few hours each is going to have a far different economic profile to the company than someone that specializes in, say, pediatric spine, and every single procedure that he or she does could take a full day or a half day, et cetera. So we're going to end up kind of diverging away from the per-doctor metric, but in the interim and then the segue kind of period, that's still a number that we feel people can wrap their arms around. Now, similarly, in terms of procedure count, we feel that may add additional value in terms of evaluating, the size of the company and the growth, but it has its own challenges as well in terms of using it as a reporting metric because, the types of surgeries and the economic returns to the company are different. Now, as we add a multivariate by new states and new verticals, that will further complicate using either of those two metrics. So what management has elected to do is work with the board and the CFO once he or she's onboarded to come up with metrics that we'll be utilizing going forward from Q3 and beyond. But for the time being, we're sharing what most people have been accustomed to in terms of the growth and the size of the company at this point.
Okay, great. I haven't had a chance to go into CEDAR and look at the detailed balance sheet. Could you discuss your receivables and generally your reimbursement rates and that sort of a thing on how collections and cash flow and so forth is coming along?
Yeah, absolutely. So, this is something that we want everyone to get extremely comfortable with because we are. The type of services that we render, by and large, are through private, or the bulk of our AR is private pay insurance companies, and specifically in out-of-network. So, from our standpoint, we knew as a private company, and certainly part of the reason we went public was to manage this process, is that there's a very lengthy cash cycle. It's not uncommon to have upwards of 6 months as the starting point of when you might get, you know, a negotiated settlement to the degree or the threshold that we're willing to accept. It's an arduous back and forth process of submitting the original bill, no doubt receiving a denial, and then working from that point on in a two-way negotiation between our billing company and the insurer to ultimately get to the finish line. The returns that we get as a result of that arduous cycle and period that it takes are obviously substantially higher than accepting what might be available to us at day 30 or day 60. And so as such, the company, raised capital to fund operations during that lag. Now, I will say this, as a private company, and frankly, even as a public company, until the results that we conveyed today, so when we're looking at the year of 2016 and Q1 of 2017, we were able to grow from concept to that 10-plus doctors and generate the returns that we did over that same period from two sources, personal capital from the founder, Preston Parsons, and then recycling cash flow from operations to continue to, you know, organically grow the business. So without a dollar of outside capital and without any debt, but for a small advance from Montreux, which was the shell company, you know, this company has been able to go from nothing to, you know, an annualized $12 to $13 million EBITDA run rate. Now, where we are now, obviously, we're accelerating that process by way of multi-state expansion. We have additional employees covering these new markets. So our general administrative costs are increasing. That said, so will our headcount and our volume of cases and services rendered. So it's more important than ever for us to be managing the cash cycle. As of June 30, we had over $1.5 million USD in cash. We have deployed a tremendous amount of capital in Q2 and certainly into Q3 in these expansion initiatives, in additional hiring. In addition to George Sims, we have a representative that is full-time now representing our services in the state of California. And to get ahead of the curve with some of the business development queue that we have and the pipeline that we have into these states and also continued expansion into Colorado, we've also hired some additional technologists to make sure that we're adequately prepared for additional doctor onboarding. We are seeing recoveries that are in line with our model. Again, 6 months is typically a starting point of when we might start to receive kind of fully negotiated settlements, but it can take 9 and even 12 months. We're quite comfortable with our cash balance. We're quite comfortable with our AR recoveries given the age of the historical AR. The balance sheet, I know you don't have it in front of you, Martin, but we have $9.8 million USD in AR. Much of that, of course, has been added in the last two quarters when the company has kind of scaled. And so, quite candidly, we won't begin collecting on a lot of that until here in the coming months. We are starting to see some of the late 2016 and early 2017 receivables turn into cash. And, of course, these are all averages. When you're conducting hundreds of procedures or rendering services on hundreds of procedures, there are plenty of times where we get a check in the mail at day 60 or day 90, et cetera. But the bulk of it comes later than that, and we're managing the balance sheet accordingly. But we're very, very comfortable with how collections are trending.
Okay. And just one final question, if you don't mind. It sounds from your Q1 and Q2, we've had growth here, and then it looks like with the addition of new doctors And coming into the busier season of the year, we're going to get revenue growth through the back half of the year. But as well, we're going to be adding expenses in terms of CFO and just you're transitioning from a bootstrap to more of an established structured business here. Can you give any sense of sort of the delta between revenue growth and expense growth and any commentary on that? And that'll be my last question. I'll leave it at that.
Sure. Thanks, Martin. The revenue growth that's coming in the balance of 2017 is, of course, coming from two different levers. The seasonal nature of the business, just having the second half be heavier than the first, and, of course, the onboarding initiatives both in the state of Colorado and some of the target states. Now, fortunately for us, you know, we're a service organization that has a modest overhead structure, and it's very easy to understand what the economics look like because the duplication is virtually identical with each doctor we get. So, you know, every new relationship lends itself to a new hire, which is a technologist, and likely a new machine, which is what they're going to use to read the cases. So that isn't going to change in terms of every doctor that we bring onto the platform having that dedicated expense center associated with them. In terms of the overhead from, you know, growing into a big boy company, you know, we do obviously have some key hires that will have additional overhead associated with them, the CFO being the main one. The office space will add a very modest component to the overhead, and by and large, anyone else that's in the office staff will be more of the administrative level. Given the size of our company, we don't see that really being a material increase in terms of you know, impacting our margins, et cetera. Negligible when you extrapolate, say, a $225,000 employee across a company that's doing $12, $13, $14 million of EBITDA, you know, it's not going to have a material basis point dip in our margins, and that should be expected, kind of, you know, on an ongoing basis, simply by managing these multi-state expansions, et cetera. The headcount to, you know, facilitate it will grow accordingly.
I'd like to add a little bit as well. You know, I actually kind of look at that as in a different way, Martin. You know, up to this point, we've been, you know, Matt and I and some third-party people that we're using here and have been using have been kind of managing this process by ourselves and thus kind of taking, you know, putting a lot on our plate and taking us away from being able to expand the business. So getting those key hires in place is going to free us up to do, you know, kind of what we do best. And you know, I think it's going to, you know, specifically me, you're going to free us up to, you know, go out and expand the business even more. So, you know, having those key hires in place, you know, yes, it will be there will be some financial impact, but, you know, I think we can far offset that with growth in the business.
The other thing to consider, and then I'll leave it for the next call, but you know, Martin, where we tracked from a year ago this time is that, you know, kind of sparse participation by outsourced service providers, whether that be legal or accounting or otherwise, was sufficient for our needs. And because the sparse utilization to these outsourced folks is kind of was the level we were at, they weren't terribly large expenditures. Where we are now is that we're spending an accelerated amount of money on these outside service providers that, frankly, bringing it in-house might either be a wash or actually cheaper than if we're utilizing these third parties full-time. Specifically, in terms of the accounting functions and overall financial functions, when we were preparing our Q2 numbers, at one point we had four different people involved that were all hourly consulting-type earners. And having those functions in-house will not only give us increased control but the cost may end up being lateral.
Thank you for your question, Martin.
All right, thanks a lot.
We will now move to Norman Hill. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, guys. A really good quarter. Question relative to revenue recognition. Since you guys, since some of the bills that you guys are negotiating with the insurance companies, how do you guys determine, what's your criteria for determining, you know, what percentage of the bill you anticipate actually getting paid?
Sure. So just to give you a little back color, Norm, and thanks for the call. We worked in conjunction with three main parties when we were a private company to develop a comprehensive data set based on historical collections that we had access to for the last 7 years. They were not Assure specific. However, they were relevant because they were the same profile type of billings. And we came up with an internal model. We came up with an internal model that was then passed off to an auditor in Denver. And then ultimately when we brought on EKS&H, they vetted the findings as well and stamped, thumbs up our rev rec policy. Now, what we do from a recording standpoint is we book, after services are rendered, a very conservative recovery number that uses those historical averages and then also has an additional component baked into it for doubtful collections, et cetera. So that's one of the reasons that you're not seeing any type of material allowance for bad debt, et cetera, because the way that we're recognizing on the front end virtually eliminates the exposure to write-downs or write-offs. And so to that point, you know, that's kind of what I addressed in terms of these true-ups. We actually have been experienced over collections. From our standpoint, we would much rather have that be the direction than the opposite. However, in speaking with our auditors last month, who assisted in a review of Q2, they said that, after Assure has enough statistically meaningful data unique to our company, that may be a policy that is ratcheted up over time, essentially insinuating that if this continues to trend, you're going to need to book at a higher basis. But we're very comfortable being on the conservative side of that. The collections have proved that we are either spot on or modestly underestimating. And so for the stage of the company that we're at, I think that's, we're comfortable with it and it's appropriate. Now, when you're getting into percentages, it's really, really not something that that we speak to, but it's also something that might not be as helpful as you think. What the bill that goes out and what you ultimately receive, it's two different exercises, especially without a network billing where there's not, a fixed agreed upon rate for each procedure, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. However, we have enough data and intelligence that we have a pretty good idea after services are rendered what that case should be worth to us.
Okay. Do you have a person on staff, like a full-time employee who's involved with the negotiations, or how is that handled?
So we use a third-party billing company that we have a relationship with that outsources almost every single function after the services are rendered in terms of the billing, the negotiation. There's much more to the process in these specific cases. IOM is a very unique niche, and so there can be, correspondence back and forth in terms of, vetting the medical necessity, providing, case studies and white papers to illustrate, why we should be paid on XYZ, CPT codes, et cetera. So that function is actually handled at our billing company. And, in fact, they have several hundred employees that are segmented into different departments, and so that, you know, the responsibilities of someone that's in coding is totally different from the division that is handling negotiations with the insurers and ultimately, you know, the settlement amounts that are agreed to. However, since the company has grown, and by that I mean Assure, we actually have been provided a dedicated team at that billing company. So Assure has its own team of people at the billing company that are devoted only to our file. And frankly, there's been talk of potentially having a satellite location devoted specifically to us in closer proximity to our headquarters here in Denver.
Okay.
Now, in terms of our in-house capabilities, you know, we manage on a day-to-day basis, we manage the data that we're getting from that billing company so that we have our pulse on the status of these negotiations, et cetera. And then we have conference calls with the team leaders in the various departments that are managing the Assure file on a consistent basis, weekly and monthly, to evaluate, you know, how everything is tracking and trending, et cetera.
Okay. These outside parties, are they paid based on the number of hours of work that they put in or just per project?
So it's actually a percentage of collections. And so, you know, you'll find that that's fairly common in outsourced medical billing, that, you know, a firm will work from between 6 and 15% of what they collect is how they get paid. We're on the lower end of that spectrum. I'm not at liberty to disclose because we have a non-disclosure agreement, but needless to say, we're in single digits in terms of our fee. But, of course, then you're aligned because it's in everyone's best interest, you know, to collect as much as possible and work that case until you get the maximum recovery. And then from our standpoint, we're happy because there's no kind of overhead component that isn't tied to recovery. We're real comfortable with that model. It, like I said, it's quite common in medical billing. And then from our standpoint, it's not a question in terms of, you know, is there ROI on the spend, because they only get paid when we do.
I got it. Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that's the way that it's structured, because, as you just pointed out, everybody's aligned in the same way, so it's good. Yeah, one of the really exciting things you guys were discussing earlier today was, you know, you're adding some new surgical verticals. You mentioned the cardiovascular. What are some of the other verticals that you guys are currently looking at?
Yeah, so the other main vertical for IOM is ear, nose, and throat. So, you know, there's more ear, nose, and throat doctors in the world than there are spine surgeons. So, I mean, that's obviously a very attractive vertical for us. You know, not every one of their surgeries uses monitoring by any means, but it is another part of the, you know, it would expand our addressable market for sure. So yeah, I mean, that is another vertical we're looking into for sure. You know, if and when we get to that point, I can't tell you when that's going to be, but I would imagine that we'll venture into that market at some point.
And just to give you some color there, because it's worth mentioning, you know, the skill set and the equipment and so forth is actually completely the same as you go into these other verticals. So it's not like by spreading our wings into these areas outside of spine that we're bringing on a whole host of new kind of learning curve expenses, or whether that be CapEx on machinery or a different type of person that we have to hire. We've actually there have been a few occasions where we've covered cases outside of spine simply because a competitor failed to show up and we happened to have an available staff member at the hospital. So what I'm saying is that they're fully capable with their training of crossing, you know, from spine into these other verticals as well. So we can deploy people across all of these different areas, you know, when that becomes relevant.
Yeah. I mean, it might,
man in, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but, you know, the more verticals we get involved with, it just dramatically increases the revenue potential, the you know, number of doctors that we could bring on board, et cetera, et cetera. And it's all good from the way I see it. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely. The fact is that, you know, we've just, if we're going to delve into cardiovascular and ENT, like Preston said, our addressable market triples because there's just simply that many more surgeons in those select verticals. However, we want to be measured about it, you know, what we're doing here. Our model is contingent on an extremely high level of service and us having these relationships in perpetuity. So we're very, you know, we're very careful about not being hasty when we enter new markets on a regional basis. We're certainly not hasty when we're exploring these other surgical verticals because there is such a high value to each of our relationships that we don't want to do anything to compromise what we already have in place. We're proud to say that not a single relationship that we've had and do have since day one, not a single person has left the Assure platform. And I can say as well that the most recent onboardings have been by way of referral. So, you know, this is something that's working. I can tell you right now that we're in what I'll call responsible duplication mode. This company was brought from concept essentially to where we are today with the efforts of one individual in business development, and that's Preston. And Preston's been able to successfully leverage his relationships and go ahead and you know, recruit doctors that are very satisfied that the platform are now referring, et cetera. And that's gotten us to this point. However, now, you know, we've got, I don't want to say this with them sitting right next to me because no one can match his efforts, but now we've got three Prestons and we're going into, you know, four to five states and all of these guys are able to work in parallel in these respective markets. So it's extremely powerful in terms of what that scale could mean in the latter part of this year and frankly more so into 2018. Many of these markets are larger than Colorado. However, the relationships that are in place are similar in terms of being able to leverage the experience and the past dealings with these doctors. George Sims obviously is the prime example of that. You know, he comes from 25 years in various national capacities in the industry. So he has a lot of the same skill set that Preston does and should be able to duplicate the successes that we've had here, you know, in his market. So the right now is, you know, we're beyond excited. We're very proud of where we are, and we think we've come a long way in what amounts to be a relatively short period of time. But with all this stuff behind us, with the RTO transaction, with, you know, the pain and suffering that goes through all of that process work in terms of taking a private company public, that's behind us. That's in the rearview mirror. That's done. And I've seen firsthand, of course, I'm not in the sales side of the business, but I've seen firsthand what's happened in the last 60 days without that as a distraction. You know, Preston, George, our representative in California, you know, they're back to business and they're hitting the ground running and we're, you know, it couldn't come at a better time as we enter into the last half of the year. All right, we do have a hard stop coming up on us, but I think we probably have time for one more question and then I think we'll leave it to kind of one-on-one follow-ups here in the coming days for those that we didn't have a chance to get to. So if we could have maybe one more caller, please.
Our final question today will be from Cole Stevens.
Hi, guys. Congrats on the first two quarters as a public company. Really, you know, outstanding numbers.
Thank you.
A couple questions. Not sure really in the detail that you're going to be able to provide. We've talked about, you know, how the ongoing metrics will be kind of changing once the in-house CFO comes on board, et cetera, and you've given a surgeon's figure. So my questions would be more on the facilities number. How many facilities are you currently doing procedures in, and if you can kind of expand maybe as a look from Q1 versus Q2, and maybe you can get into that a bit.
I'd have to look for it to be absolutely certain, but I think we're currently working in 12 to 13 different facilities. Here specifically in the Denver market, there's a lot of concentration in a number of just a small number of hospitals, and so lucky for us, we don't have to go too far to cover a lot of cases. So there's about that many hospitals and a few surgery centers as well. What was the second part of your question? I apologize.
So from a go-forward case, just to add a little color to that, and just so you kind of understand that, part of the process when we are in the onboarding phase of bringing on a doctor that we're going to cover cases is, a thorough analysis of where they operate. And if we're not already credentialed at that property, we go ahead and take care of that during the onboarding process. But most of the systems we are already, doing active day-to-day business in. And some doctors might, do some cases at one facility and others, at another altogether. And then, of course, that's just Colorado specific. We'll be evaluating that in, different regional environments. For instance, Texas, which looks to be the most likely state of near-term expansion, to see how that kind of trends as well. But, of the doctors that I mentioned we're working with, which I said as of right now is 19, like Preston said, that's spread across, 12 or 13 locations within the state.
Perfect. That's great on that. Also, a couple more here. Now, I know that it's tough, and you said that, the due diligence process when looking at a kind of a new state is kind of 3 to 4 months, and it is a process, which I get as we really look to be thorough here. But is there any sort of timeline that you can give on a second state coming online that would produce, material revenue in a sense?
Sure. The good news is this legal, thorough, deep dive for the state of Texas, Louisiana, Utah, and frankly almost California is done. And so the expense of it, the lead-up time that goes into it, we've already overcome all of that. The lawyers have been paid, the opinions have been written, and right now we're literally having high-level meetings with our strategic, first cut of doctors that we end up, thinking that would be the most logical to onboard into the Assure platform. There absolutely will be contribution in Q4, and I don't want to get too granular, but there's an outside chance that we might have a very modest level of contribution from Texas in the latter part of Q3, but certainly some contribution from new states in Q4, and then everyone's firing on all cylinders as we get into 2018. So we're in many, many active conversations right now in multiple states, Texas being the most likely to be the first kind of onboarding outside of Colorado. And what's exciting for us is, with George and his kind of deep ties from years in the business, it's not just individual doctors that we're talking to. We're now talking to groups that have, multiple surgeons under one roof. So, anyways, that's exciting. There will be 2017 economic contribution from these efforts. Frankly, I think it's really materially a Q4 and beyond number, though.
Perfect. That's great color there. Two more, or maybe two, or there's three really quick ones, and then I'll let you go. Is there any kind of way you can provide what would be, I know that you're comfortable with collections and where they're at and getting an understanding, the cash cycle is lengthy, but, with kind of the conservative on the front end, we don't see that, those bad debts on the back end, but what about the current kind of DSO figure? I know you haven't really provided that yet. Is there any color you can give on what would be a comfortable DSO that you're currently at?
So I have an internal model that I keep a very tight pulse on. It's not a number that we share, but a brief analysis of our recent kind of CDAR filings, you could get to what our cash cycle has looked like here over the last two quarters in particular. I'll say that the vast majority of full recoveries come well after 6 months. So what we model out is actually no collections in the first 6 months. When we say what does the company need to be willing to put forward on a cash out basis when we onboard a doctor, and how long are we willing to absorb that without any recoveries? And in my model, I don't have a single dollar coming in for the first 180 days. Now, that's always proved wrong, but the material amount of collections happen after 6 months.
Okay. Gotcha. That's perfect, Aaron. Obviously, I haven't had a chance to really go through the CDAR filings yet for this.
Yeah, I know. It's just, 10 minutes before the call is probably not enough time to get a thorough review under your belt. But the information's out there. And, I can, in a different setting with a little bit more time on our side, I'm happy to drill down a bit further, but just in the interest of what I can share on a call like this in 5 minutes, that's kind of where we are.
Perfect. And then two more quick ones, and I'll let you go. In terms of, obviously, Assure bills for all the technical services, so my assumption would be, and maybe you can just correct me if I'm wrong, that you also are billing for any professional services, or would I be wrong to say that?
No, you're correct. We are billing for both technical and professional services. And might as well get this out right now for when people do have a chance to look at CDAR filings. But the contribution from our pro rata component of the professional bill is conveyed by way of earnings from equity method investments. So when you're looking at our income statement, the professional component is associated with that line item, whereas the technical component is really the quote-unquote operational top line.
I see. Now, talking about the, the P&Es in a sense, maybe you can just give me a little bit more color on, the future of kind of the professional side and what you see, the growth in that area as a percentage of revenue moving forward. I know it'll be hard to give any sort of number, but maybe you can speak to if you see that, being a growth area or growth side of the business as well, or whether it's kind of going to be where it is today, kind of in step percentage-wise as we move forward with current revenue.
I think the way that things have trended in Q1 and Q2 can be expected to not materially change in terms of the contribution from professional vis-a-vis the contribution from technical. Most of the relationships that we develop have comparable structure, and so I think that those respective contributions will continue to trend as they are right now.
Okay, and would you expect that any more sort of relationships in the P&Es, with the P&Es will be kind of formed as we go? Would you expect that?
Yes, I would.
Okay, perfect. That would be it for me, guys. Congrats once again.
Thanks again for your time, Cole.
Thanks again for the call there as well. I know we didn't get to everyone, and we absolutely do want to speak with anyone that didn't have a chance to field their questions. We appreciate everyone's support in getting to this stage. We're very happy with the results, especially given the cost of the RTO transaction. We're square in the middle of our busiest time of year, and we're really excited about what the remaining Q3 and Q4 will bring to the company. With that, we're going to go ahead and adjourn the call, and I'll leave it to everyone on a one-on-one basis to reach out to either Preston or myself in the coming days. Thanks, everyone, for joining.
Once again, that does conclude today's conference call. Thank you all for your participation.